Cassini friends, welcome in. You're listening to Jawa Chatter. Episodes arrive every Thursday morning. With me today is just Jeffers and Claudia. No nerdy. I apologize. Our personal Star Wars encyclopedia is out this week because what we're talking about today actually is Star Wars Clone Wars Season 2. And although Nerdy has seen it,
he hasn't seen it like four times.
He hasn't seen it recently. Unfortunately, he and Clarice Hupp don't have time. If you want to check out their YouTube channel with a bunch of reactions and stuff, you can head over to Nerdy Nightly and see more of him.
He's doing a lot of Sandman right now.
He's very busy. And also just we really want to take the opportunity to talk about season two now because Claudia and I just got done with it. We're kind of more on a rapid pace now. If you've checked out some of the podcasts previously, we were going through Clone Wars with Nerdy and Clarus throughout some of the show. But, you know, there's a lot of Star Wars content on the horizon. And
we kind of got to power through
and Nerdy and Clarus can't right now. Nerdy will be back next week, by the way. We're not going to go through every episode and we're not going to probably talk about Clone Wars again until Claudia and I get through season three. So that's kind of the plan.
We're cruising pretty quickly, though.
We are cruising. And if you want to see that updated list, it is not our list. It is a list that we basically found that is a sequential slash chronological order that makes it make sense. Even if it's your second time viewing it like myself, it actually makes a lot of sense. And then if you're the first time viewer like Claudia, I can't imagine watching it any other way this day and age.
Yeah, it definitely helps a lot. And honestly, you know, season one is all over the place. It's not that I don't like it. It's just season two has improved drastically in my mind.
Yeah, and that's the key takeaway, I think. I used to be quoting to people that, hey, just...
Through two seasons.
Well, no, actually, I think I said all the way to season three or halfway through season three. I'd actually like to walk that back. I don't agree after rewatching season two. I actually think it picks up very well in season two, and I think it has... Most of these episodes in season two, in my opinion, are crucial... For the storyline overall of the Clone Wars and some of it also even for the shows
and some things that pop up. Like, it's been exciting for me, not only, like, yes, I've watched Mandalorian, yes, I've watched Book of Boba Fett, but also I'm playing Lego Star Wars with Jeffers right now, and so I'm getting to know a lot of these
sometimes
side characters,
by herself.
Which is a point of contention in the household, clearly.
No.
It's been fun to see. I'm like, oh, wow, I know who this person is.
Yeah, and there are some, like, I don't want to say throwaway episodes in season two. There isn't. I think season one has plenty of throwaway episodes that you could honestly completely not watch and you'd lose nothing. Whereas season two, even the ones that aren't technically necessary, they're like one-off episodes. They don't have, like, a three-episode arc like a lot of these do. They're still interesting. Like, Ahsoka losing her lightsaber. Is it necessary to watch that episode? Probably not. But is it interesting? Yeah, it's pretty interesting. In fact, we even have like a little callback by the Jedi who helps her. Spoilers ahead for Obi-Wan Kenobi show. There's a little like cameo appearance that he was captured by the Empire at some point, and they were using him for his Force abilities. And you know he's dead, obviously, but like he pops up very briefly. So there's a lot to take away from season two, and I think Claudia finally started to get into it because of this season. So that's kind of why we want to talk about it. If you've been on the fence or you have friends that have been on the fence, sequential order, first of all. Check that list. You can find it on our pinned tweet for a reason. And I highly recommend it. Go to Jawa Chatter.
It's used by us more than probably anyone else, but
yeah, fine. We definitely reference it consistently. Yeah. But I would highly recommend it. And then... really, I guess, and I actually would say this about Rebels, too. It just turns out that season one of these shows are kind of the ones to really get through. Though they are necessary, I know they can be tough for some people, especially since it's like 24-ish episodes. But I'd say after watching season two, it's highly worth it. We're going to go through the highlights of the season. We're not going to go through every little thing.
Yeah.
Not going to do that much of a breakdown.
The arcs, all that good stuff.
Really important things. I think the first one was actually within the first arc, which is the Cad Bane one.
Yeah.
So Claudia's first experience with Cad Bane, weirdly, was the Book of Boba Fett.
Yep.
So she didn't have much of a connection to him, and I feel like now you kind of understand him more.
I had watched small bits of Rebels with him randomly when he was watching it in our studio apartment before we had moved. And
the dark times
before we had a larger apartment. The importance of space.
We're doing really well.
We are now.
I miss Nerdy.
Oh, he'd probably be making fun of you with me.
That's true. Moving on. Anyways, let's...
Just the scale, and I don't even say the level of evilness. He just doesn't have really a moral line.
No.
At all. Like,
he's very different from Jango Fett.
Fett has morals. Hell, even Hondo has more morals than Cad Bane in my mind.
He would do anything to get paid, and I think this three-episode arc sells the tone of who Cad Bane is.
He's stealing children.
He is the most ruthless of bounty hunters. So in the three episode arc, it starts off more like a Star Wars level bank heist on the Holocron, and it's Palpatine that's clearly sent him. But he's dastardly, right? His droid friend, he has no regard for life.
Up.
He uses him as a distraction to blow him up. And you know, then we have Cargo of Doom that shows up after that. Turns out the cargo is Force-sensitive children he's hunting down. Yes. And then we get to the third episode, and there's the children that have been delivered, and they're about to be, you know, have experiments run on them. I mean, it gets... And he's good with all of it. He's aware of all of it.
He doesn't care.
He doesn't. He's like, as long as I get paid what we agreed upon, if not more. And he's good with that. And I really think that sets the tone of that he is the most ruthless bounty hunter, in the sense that there are no morals that guide him. He is, I think, what a lot of people maybe in the galaxy, when they think of a bounty hunter, that's actually probably what they think of, as somebody like that. Whereas, yeah, don't get me wrong, Jango and Boba Fett, they're not angels, and none of the other bounty hunters are either. Aura Sing's a great, you know, example. We'll talk about her later. Bossk, definitely not an angel, right? But I think...
They're more in the gray area than just like to the
right
pure dark side.
And Jango and Boba definitely have a sense of honor that I think originates, in my opinion, from their Mandalorian origin, or at least Jango's, who he passes on, and his morals he passes on to his son. But whereas Cad Bane is, there's nothing there. There's no heart, I don't think. I think he's the Grinch of Star Wars, essentially. Yep. But he's a very cool character at the same time. he personifies the space Western cowboy.
Yes, yeah, it's Dave Filoni is a really scary dude who's blue.
I don't know. Dave Filoni's a nice man. Dave Filoni, if you ever hear this, we do not think ill of you, sir. We love you. The
listener. I said if he was really scary.
Oh, I didn't hear the if part. I don't think anyone heard the if part.
No, I said if.
And I'm sitting right next to you. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that arc was, I mean, you thought that was really interesting, right? I feel like that grabbed you from the beginning.
It was a really great arc for one. Yeah. Two, obviously I was curious about Cad Bane, seeing him in Book of Boba Fett, because the whole internet blew up, and I'm like...
Yeah, I mean, I lost my shit when I was sitting right next to her, and she had no idea.
And I was like, I'm a newbie!
Yeah. And so then we moved on to a one-off episode, and this isn't one you necessarily need to see, so
I thought it was a good juxtaposition, though, against Cad Bane. They like work
with
bounty hunters.
You're right. It is literally just like a flip of like a different story of bounty hunters that actually, they're getting paid. So they're getting paid by this village that is too weak to defend themselves as individuals. But they have a very lucrative crop, and the bounty hunters could take them for all they're worth, but they don't. They take them for less than they should, or could, I should say, not should, they could. And they really go above and beyond what they've agreed upon. Like, they're defending them from these pirates, which we find out.
Hondo! Hondo! Always Hondo!
It's always Hondo. Yeah. I swear it's always Hondo. He's at odds again with both Obi-Wan and Anakin. It's like he just loves fighting against these two.
He really does. But, you know, those bounty hunters, they were like, you know, it's five of us against, what, like 25, 30 pirates?
Oh,
like,
it was not
a
more.
Pretty
yeah.
significant.
Big UFO ship.
Force. And they didn't like back down and be like, this bounty's not worth it. They were like, no, we're going to do it.
No. Yeah. They're like, we said we would do it. This is what we agreed upon. We're going to do it. We're going to follow up. And there's a lot of speculation, interestingly enough, from like the Jedi and even Hondo. That's like, you're just really in it because you want the resource for yourself after we leave. Right. And they never do that. Even Obi-Wan is suspicious when the commander of the group is moving the citizens and the crop, the storage of it, into the barn, also where their ship is. So, but really, at no point in time do they ever try to double cross anyone. They're very true to their word, and it's a fun episode. It's a very predictable episode.
It's interesting seeing Obi-Wan being like, you know, we're not going to get involved in this. This is, you know, a local thing. One piece that I was like, oh, like.
But also, they have to get to the space station to deliver a. They need to deliver a message to warn their own army.
Yeah.
But the problem is they can't get off the planet anyways without the bounty hunter's help. And then, of course, they're Jedi and they kind of get involved. So and
Anakin doesn't have any sort of moral boundary when it comes to helping people. He's like,
I don't feel like that's the case. In fact, if anything, sometimes I do agree with Anakin in the sense that, like, we're Jedi. We're supposed to help everybody, no matter how small the situation.
Yeah.
And in some sense, I really do agree with him on that. Does he always go about it the best way? No. Does he always prioritize things the correct way? No. But, like, Obi-Wan is a rare occasion where I disagree with him. He's thinking this from a military perspective. Anakin's thinking this from a moral perspective.
Yeah.
I'm not saying necessarily Obi-Wan is wrong, right? Because, and then this becomes like the trolley problem, right? Like, the overall conflict that's happening in space versus the little people, so to speak, on the ground facing problems that the Republic is not helping them with. It becomes a moral quandary throughout this entire show. You will see more of it. We will go down to the depths of Coruscant in later episodes that we're going to talk about. Like, it does get very interesting how the bigger this war gets, the more left behind the people feel. And that, I think, plays a factor into the fall of the Jedi when they're gone. Nobody cares. Nobody notices. Nobody asks questions. Because you know what? They weren't helping me anyways, so to speak. So, but yeah, it's not a necessary episode. Is it interesting, though? I think so. I think it is. Next arc is Zillow Beast.
So basically Godzilla animal, but
This is Godzilla of Star Wars.
There's a lot of influence for that.
Yeah, this wasn't the strongest arc in my opinion out of this season, though I still found it interesting. And also, I think season two reminded me of how brutal the show can be. This is a beast that is
supposedly extinct.
Supposedly extinct. They launch the bomb. It wakes them up. And then Sebulba's race, which their name has escaped me all of a sudden. It'll probably come to me later. They're on that planet and, you know, they're like, well, we're going to go back to what our ancestors did. We're going to kill it ourselves.
Like pouring gasoline on them.
It's like a chemical compound that honestly resembles acid or gasoline, and it's what kills them. And it gets very brutal. It takes a lot of effort from Mace Windu and Anakin to basically get them to agree. Well, not even get them to agree. They come up with a plan to knock him out so that they can be like, look, he's down. We'll take him off the planet, okay?
Yeah.
Which is weird. Now that I said I agree with Anakin last time, I'm now flipped because like now Anakin's like, it's just a monster and, you know, it's us or him. His moral line at times for certain things is very odd to me. I don't know if that has like a thing just because of like, it's because of Palpatine's influence, because you have Palpatine right there going like, yeah,
he's
just kill it.
Yeah.
And like, Anakin just agrees with him. And I really think if anything, that's the message from this episode and arc is like, Anakin is already on board thinking that he knows best, which really comes into play later. Like he's already kind of poisoned his mind a little bit. Like he's listening to him over other Jedi. So it's very interesting. Anyways, I don't want to dwell on this one too much. It's pretty standard of Godzilla escapes. Godzilla wreaks havoc on Coruscant because it's basically Jurassic Park 2, The back half of it, which back third of it, which was taking place in San Diego later. Now it's Coruscant, which is even a worse idea, honestly, because the whole planet's one giant city.
But I did enjoy the fact that it was smart enough that he like went straight after Palpatine.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
I was like, man, what would have happened if the Zillow Beast had eaten Palpatine?
Well, what could have been?
What it could have, should have. Yeah. And then he dies.
Dies. But then the most important takeaway outside of what I just said is what Palpatine says at the end secretly to the scientist that was very reluctant to even kill him in the first place, the Beast, or try to. Clone him. And that is the message here, because that is a big focus that will come to play later on in some other shows. So, yeah, after that, we move on to another one-off. It is I call it the Clovis episode. If you've never met Clovis, this is your chance. This one's pretty straightforward in the sense that there is a traitor within the Senate, the Republic, and it happens to be an old fling of Padme's.
You see, technically, Padme and Anakin, like, go on a date at the beginning of it. That was interesting.
I haven't
really seen much of their dating
life. I read a book recently about, it's called Brotherhood. It was took place right after episode 2. And you get a real good glimpse into what they do as a couple. Literally just as a couple, not as Senator and Jedi.
Because they have to be pretty secretive. Like, they can't be, like,
out. And in the book, they were, too. And I actually forgot that they did this in the show. And it really reminded me of the book, which was great. Like, I think they did a very good job of being like, what is it like when nobody's looking at these two and they're just together?
Yeah, because they're married for 5 years before, you know.
Yeah, the Clone Wars take place over 5 years. So by the time we get to Revenge of the Sith, it's been, you know, 5 years. And, yeah, it was brief. And the only thing I didn't really understand was why Padme got so upset, as if she doesn't know what the arrangement is for them. Like, he is a Jedi and he got called to duty. What is he supposed to do exactly?
I just think at a certain point, your emotions get in the way. You're like, I never get to sue. You're finally here. Like, I want to be with my boo.
Yeah. And I think that actually is a very subtle point that's made in this episode that is like, well, think about it. If this is happening in year like one or two or whatever year we're in technically in the timeline, think about that years later. This has probably happened multiple times. This is very, it's very strenuous to lie about this all the time. In fact, when they, in episode 2, she tries to say no to Anakin because like, it'll destroy us. And it does. Like, it's part of the problem.
They're basically in a secret long distance relationship that where they have two major jobs that are always pulling them away from one another. It's the cards are stacked against them from the get-go.
Honestly, if they want to stay together, the problem is they want to be together, but they don't. Neither one of them wants to sacrifice the thing they love doing, and instead they go in secret, and that just kind of blows up in their face throughout, you know,
all of it.
But there are some nice moments, and I think we did have one right before it got sour, but it got sour pretty quick, actually.
Yeah.
But,
and Anakin got very possessive of Padme.
Yeah.
As we would expect.
Yeah. The other thing is he gets very possessive throughout this episode, very jealous of Clovis, even though there's nothing to worry about, honestly. Like, she's married to him. He's definitely a sleazeball. And, you know, this episode is pretty predictable, too, actually, in my opinion. But is it worth watching? I think it is because it comes to play later on in Clone Wars. So I think it's important. I don't think it's as much of a one-off as the farm area with the bounty hunters. This one's a bit more important in my opinion.
So. Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think that it matters to give context and color to their relationship.
It does. And on top of that, I think a lot of people's complaints about the prequels was, how did Anakin go from, I'm Jedi helping save people, to I'm now killing everything? This does play into his obsessive tendencies and his jealous emotions and some other things that I think help shape what happens.
Yeah.
So I think it's important. Next is a brutal arc, and a very interesting arc.
This is like a must-watch arc.
This is a must-watch arc. So taking back Geonosis, that is the arc that I'm basically calling it. First off, if anyone remembers what happened at the end of episode 2, is they have Geonosis. Okay? They have Geonosis, right? They even have the leader of the Geonosians. He even leaves with the Death Star plans to give to Dooku, who then gives it to Palpatine. So, again, they have Geonosis. But then some point during the writing of this, they're like, yeah, they don't have Geonosis anymore. How are we going to explain that? They just do throwaway lines of how they don't have Geonosis, by the way. There's like a few throwaway lines in this episode that crack me up.
Well, it comes down to, they're like, oh, we must have lost it because of the worms, which we find out in part of this.
Like, they're not even to that yet, though. Like, we have a throwaway line of like, well, not throwaway. It's actually interesting. Obi-Wan talks about it on the ship with the other clones. Like, Commander Cody, first of all, I used to think Commander Cody was one of the clones you see in episode 2, right? Until you see this episode, and I think they literally try to clear that up by saying Obi-Wan talks to Commander Cody about Geonosis, and Cody mentions back to him, like, I actually wasn't deployed yet. I wasn't there for the Geonosis battle. So that clears that up. That wasn't Commander Cody. Good to know. And then later on, there also is another line that we'll get to that, like Claudia said, they're just like, oh, I guess that's how we lost Geonosis. I'm like, you just guess that's how you lost it? You don't have any intelligence on that? Okay.
Yeah.
But this is an interesting episode, arc. It's brutal. It's brutal as hell. I mean, it is like taking back Geonosis, it is exactly what you think it would be. It's like, if you're going after one of the homeworlds of your enemy, because they have this huge droid factory, they're going to protect it at all costs, and you have a three-way landing party, and man, there are so many clones that die, so many ships that go down.
And also, Palpatine definitely gave the location to Geonosis anyways, so like, you were...
No, they had the location. They've been there before.
No, I'm talking about when they landed.
Oh, yeah, because they actually make a little thing there, too. It was supposed to be a surprise attack, and then they're attacked immediately when they get into the air.
Does Palpatine?
Yeah, and one of the what somebody said, one of the clones said, somebody must have tipped him off because they started firing right away. And you know, I think it was actually Obi-Wan that said, "Yeah, that seems to keep." He basically said that seems to keep happening. Weird, huh?
So weird.
Yeah.
Also, Obi-Wan's ship literally crashes like in that first episode of it too. Like yeah, whole piece. Then they go down, and this is probably one of the creepiest episodes I've seen. Like when they go to the Geonosis Queen.
Yeah, after they've fought through this really hard battle in episode one, which I think is very interesting to watch, because you got Anakin, Ahsoka, Obi-Wan, Mace. It's very interesting. They go underground as they follow, basically. God, the Geonosian leader, his name has escaped me, even though we just talked about him. Pog. So Pog goes down, and they go under this temple, basically, and they find the Geonosian queen, who is apparently... But on the way there, they find... And this is one of those interesting Star Wars episodes to me. Some of the Geonosians, the ones underground, are actually zombies.
They're all zombie bugs.
They are zombie bugs who apparently cannot be killed, even when sometimes shooting them in the head, which I find very interesting. They're like super zombie bugs.
Obi-Wan knew a lot about the legends on Geonosis, which I thought was interesting. He was like, there's a queen. I was like, why does Obi-Wan have such... I was like, is he salty after he got put in a ring, decided to like learn about them?
Yeah, he does like reference episode two a lot throughout it, like talking about his time in the ring, talking about their invasion, talking about all the stuff he knows about the Geonosians. Like, it's very interesting. A lot of callbacks in this episode.
Clones are like, let's kill these bugs. And Obi-Wan's like, I know they have a Geonosis queen. And I'm like,
it's really different. He also seems to have a bit more sympathy towards them, which is interesting. Like, he actually, and there's the difference between Anakin and Obi-Wan again. Anakin's like, let's kill these bugs. Also, so are the clones. Whereas Obi-Wan seems to have some sort of like sympathy towards them. And even though they like, you know, helped capture him and all this thing from episode two, like you mentioned. But he seems to like try to take things peacefully. They don't work out, obviously, right? Apparently, Geonosian Queen also talks, which is a very creepy voice that she does. Kudos to the voice actor or actress, whoever did that. Well done. Definitely haunted my dreams. And yeah, so they make it out. And, you know, I thought I thought it was going to be a two episode thing. Like, I really did. When they left, it felt very final to me. Like, they entombed them in there. For whatever reason, Anakin had a panic attack when he saw Obi-Wan holding the worm completely controlled, because these worms that go through the nose, brutally, by the way, and then take the host over, and he like...
The hive mind.
Yeah, the hive mind. Obi-Wan wanted to study it, Anakin smashes it. And I was like, and they're like, okay, well, I hope we don't need that information. And I guess that should have been foreshadowing, because in
the next episode,
we have, Ahsoka and Barriss, who we shouldn't have skipped over. Should have mentioned, by the way, they were part of the assault.
Yeah.
And that's the first time we meet Barriss. And
also we see the difference of like how Anakin doesn't trust Ahsoka quite as much as, you know, the trust that she has in Barriss.
Oh, that's true.
Who's the Jedi Master?
I am just blanking on names today for some weird reason. It's going great. It's going really great. It will come to me.
It will come to you.
Yeah, but that's true. And I think that's not because he doesn't trust Ahsoka. I think he trusts Ahsoka very much. I think it plays once again to how overly protective and obsessive he is. He cannot fathom the idea of losing someone he cares about.
Yeah, we also see the desperation of when they blow up the entire factory. You know, she kind of gives up on Barriss being alive almost.
So Luminar even says this. It finally hit me. I didn't even look up. I was starting to look at my phone and I just clicked. Luminara even says to Anakin, because Anakin's freaking out, right? He's actually visibly upset. And she's like a renowned Jedi, by the way. And
she's like, I care for her. I will mourn her. But like, again, she just
prepared to lose her.
Yes. And
which is dark, by the way. She is a child.
But it's a war. It's a war.
I'm aware, but she is a child that she's like, yeah, well, I'm prepared to lose her. No, and
what she's done, she saved, you know, countless lives blowing up this factory.
Right, but, you know, it would be argued that Luminara gave up a little too fast. I will agree with that. I will agree with Anakin in that. So I think both of them are too extreme on both sides of that coin there. One's a little too like, well, it's been fun, Barriss. I'll go find me a new Padawan. And then, you know, Anakin's like, can't let her out of my sight. Yeah. So a little bit extreme on both sides for me. But they do eventually make it out. And it is very interesting, the dynamic between Ahsoka and Barriss, because you can see the influence on each master as well. Ahsoka's a bit more action-oriented. Barriss is a bit more, let's think it through and let's calmly do this and let's do it right how we're instructed. So you can definitely see the influence there as well. And then, like I said, I thought that'd be the last episode, but Barriss and Ahsoka leave. Everyone else is pretty beat up or has got something else going on. And then the masters actually have to go to a different direction. So they're like, oh, we'll send you two to go do the easy mission, to go to the, basically the medical space station. Right. And so
they drop off supplies.
Yeah. Draw off supplies. Easy mission. Easy peasy. Right. Sure. Of course. And then we got the brain invaders. That's literally what the episode's called, Brain Invaders. And right before that, Obi-Wan mentions at the end of the last episode, it's like, oh, I guess that's how we lost Geonosis. I'm like, you don't think you would have noticed zombie bugs, or maybe would have noticed?
I don't know.
You're telling me that this is the first time the bugs have gotten clones as their hosts, because that's what happens, right? The 1A gets on board, it breaks open, starts with one, and then gets a bunch of others, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, it's like one of us. They're like,
one of us. It is very culty, very hive mind. It's an interesting episode. It gets very weird very quickly.
Yeah, Barriss and Ahsoka have to fight. They freeze out the whole thing. They're like frozen. Yeah.
Yeah, Barriss loses that fight, though. And the most important part of this episode, though, it comes at the end. We have Pog, who has been captured, right? He's been captured by the Jedi. They went a different way. Now, all the Jedi Masters on that ship are trying to get him to talk, to tell them a weakness for these, you know, brain invaders that Ahsoka and Barriss are dealing with on the ship. He's like, why would I? I'm clearly a prisoner of war. I have nothing to gain from telling you anything. And not only that, if they dock onto that space station, that can now infect the whole space station. So like, it's to his advantage, he's not going to tell them. So they've all tried. But then Anakin quietly goes by himself. And he tells the guards to leave. And the first time ever, I think this is the first time, I don't remember seeing it season one.
I haven't seen it in season one, yeah.
We see a force choke from Anakin on him, and then it is insinuated that he continues to torture him further.
To get the information. And they were like, how did you get that information? Like, the other masters asked
doesn't
that.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter right now. Doesn't matter right now. We got to save Ahsoka.
Yep.
Because that's all that matters, and that's what he will do anything. And there was no guarantee that Ahsoka would have died or lost without that information. Would she? Maybe. Probably. But that's not his call, but apparently it was. And he will do anything, and that is the issue here. He'll do anything to save somebody. So.
Yeah.
It was brutal. It was really brutal, but it was really interesting, and I think it really, again, paints a really good picture of the arc of Anakin Skywalker during this war. And you know, I liked it. I thought it was a really good arc. Very out there, though. Very out there, even for Star Wars. Then we have like another arc, which is like trying to capture General Grievous while saving Master Ethkoth, who is on the Jedi Council, and also brutal, by the way. Grievous is torturing him, so that's fun. But you know, this arc is kind of weird in the sense that we know Grievous can't be captured. Like we just know there's really no stakes there.
And also, Anakin can't meet him.
I pointed that out to Claudia, because if you pay attention to Revenge of the Sith, when he first meets him on Grievous's ship, they greet each other like this is the first time they've seen each other face to face. Whereas Obi-Wan and him, they know each other many times. So really, it's already known that's going to be an Obi-Wan Grievous thing, and that's what it is throughout. I found this arc to be interesting, but not like
Not my favorite of
not my favorite two. Either, even though I do like a good Grievous episode arc. It was just because, like I said, there wasn't much to worry about. The most interesting thing actually didn't come from Grievous or the Jedi. It came from when they were crash landed on the planet and we found a clone deserter.
Yeah.
That was the most interesting thing, and that was something important to remember for the rest of this season as well.
And different from the first clone deserter that we saw, I think we might have been in season 3, but it was
part season of 3 but part of season 1, arc, yeah.
Yeah, that just like, hey, because we're brothers, that's why I'm leaving. This one was like, you know, I chose to have a life. I chose to have a family. Like, this is the life that I wanted. And he doesn't turn him in either, which I thought was interesting too.
Yeah, it definitely plays into the question of the moral quandary that is having these clones in the war. No one really asked them if they were cool with it. They were just made and then thrown into it. And I think some of them have started to question that, clearly, because we have a clone deserter. At least one that we actually have met and know, could be more.
And it's like, he's like, what have you imagined for your life? He's like, I haven't thought about it. And he's like, I've just been, you know, told to do this. And he's like, of course you've thought about it. Everyone's thought about it. That's a clone.
Yeah. So it was a really, I actually loved this episode just purely for, the growth of Rex's character, questioning things around him. Cause Rex just comes off as this perfect good soldier that would, you know, do no wrong.
I don't really know Rex that well, to be honest, just yet. Just that he's like a loyal soldier.
I feel like he's been in a lot of episodes.
Yes, they rely on him heavily, but like, I don't know much about his personality other than, you know, he throws some jabs at Anakin and occasionally Obi-Wan, but not quite much. Like, this kind of fleshed him out a little bit more for me.
Yeah, no, this is good. He had his own moral quandary, and he decided to not rat out the deserter, which I thought was great. And I think it really is very key episode to watch, at the very least, for the overall arc of this show and the Clone Wars and Revenge of the Sith as well.
Yeah.
So after that, we, like I mentioned kind of briefly earlier, Ahsoka loses her lightsaber. This is another one-off. And is it necessary? Not really, no. I like the episode personally, though. What about you?
I really liked it because I like seeing Ahsoka work with other Jedi Masters and the difference between how they train her versus Anakin and like the lack of patience. Like, that's one of the things they brought up is like, you know, you're so much like your master, like the patience here, like just stop freaking out. Basically, you're kind of all over the place.
To be fair, Tara Sanube, he moves at a turtle pace, and that was the basic story here, was tortoise and the hare.
Yep.
He was the tortoise, she was the hare, and he almost always came up on the upend capturing the bad guys just because he kind of knew what they were going to do, and he was thinking before he was acting, and she was doing the opposite. And yeah, I like that part of the episode. It wasn't my favorite episode, but I still liked it, and I think it was very telling the way Anakin teaches versus Ahsoka's not getting very rounded out, in my opinion.
And also, like, how Padawans and Masters have changed so much since the war versus prior to that. Because, you know, Sanube doesn't have a Padawan. He's too old at this point.
And he's not really fighting in the war.
No.
But he was excited to go on an adventure.
Yeah.
I like the guy. He is good. He's very well done.
All right. This arc, must watch, especially for Mandalorian.
Most of these are a must watch. But yeah, this one is emphasis on the must watch. This is a young Boba Fett who infiltrates a Republic.
Mandalore.
Oh, this is Mandalore. You're right. Oh, yeah. These are the next two. Actually, all of the rest of this is important. Mandalore arc, which, you know, if you've seen The Mandalorian, the live action show, and you've seen the end of season 2, so I guess, I don't know, spoilers in case you haven't. Kind of weird, I guess, if you haven't. But it is suggested and known that we are going to basically go to Mandalore. It's going to be involved in season 3 of Mandalore. There's also been leaks of the trailer, etc. And I think this was, ironically, Claudia's first time seeing Mandalore. And this is a lot of people's first time seeing Mandalore because it's not in live action. This will be the first time it's in live action is Mandalorian season 3. And we kind of we see, like, weirdly, a peaceful Mandalore. Even though every time we see somebody from Mandalore, it's like Bo-Katan or it's like, you know, Mando or somebody who can fight.
That. It's like there's nothing left of our planet is what I've
right.
basically been told. Do I know what that looks like? not yet, but I'm sure I'll see it in season three, and I'm sure I'll see it throughout the rest of Clone Wars and probably Rebels.
But now you see what it was like in it, when it was...
Glory days.
Yeah. Well, glory days. Depends on who you're asking. Yeah. Some people like to fight. Their name's Death Watch.
Yes.
Death Watch likes to fight, and that was the main point of this arc, was Death Watch, which is a very key organization. This is going to come into play. Hell, we're already in season three watching, and we're already seeing Mandalore again and seeing other things that have happened on Mandalore. So this is definitely a must watch. It gets very interesting. My favorite part about this Mandalore first arc is actually the Obi-Wan Satine dynamic for multiple reasons. One, I think it shows Obi-Wan's more human side rather than his strict following the rules nature, because he clearly has feelings for this woman. It is very obvious. And two, I also like seeing him lose his composure. It's funny. And it's also, again, makes him even more human. Like, literally, at one point, these two were having a screaming match about politics with each other, while everyone else in the room is, like, backing away as far as they can.
Can we go to dinner and cool, like, off?
I'm hungry. Can we go eat now, Mom and Dad? So, I really love this arc quite a bit, mainly for Obi-Wan. And also meeting Satine. She's a badass.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that dynamic. It also made me think that maybe that's why... Because Obi-Wan's gotta know about Padme and Anakin if he, like, really thought about it. So maybe part of his compassion for that is like, man, I wish that could have been me and Satine.
Yeah, but also, like, the difference between the two is interesting, right? It is similar, right? Jedi, somebody in a political position, but the difference is they made the choice to not do it.
Because they kept with what they was asked of them.
Yeah, they stuck with the principles and the agreements they made.
Yeah.
And so they stuck with that. Then the other funny thing about this arc is also just watching Anakin's pure amusement about his old master losing his composure, having this woman absolutely ruffle his feathers. I mean, at one point you literally see Anakin just grinning, watching it play out. He pulls an Obi-Wan. He just kind of sits back, watches, has a good time.
Yeah, we also see Palpatine plotting quite a bit, you know.
A lot.
Yeah, like, the recording's only halfway done. It's trying to kill, you know, Duchess Satine, like, all of these things. Like, and her having to prove her innocence. And also seeing how much of a thorn in Palpatine's side Padme is. Mm-hmm. But he cannot dispose of her because of Anakin. Like, he can't do it yet.
Yeah, it's also just would be really... I think she'd be a tough one, too, as well, because I feel like she's always just front and center. But yeah, she is a key chess piece at the end of it all, right? To kind of really set him off, kind of turn that last corner to the dark side. He kind of needs her around. Also, you know, Satine's kind of a thorn in his side. Like, she goes from being queen...
Duchess,
to being... hunted down as a criminal, to then clearing her name. And honestly, she does most of it herself.
Yep.
Yes, she does get help from Obi-Wan and Anakin.
A little bit, Anakin, but not as much as you think.
Anakin stalls for time. Padme helps out. But really, 90% of it, I feel like, is really Satine. And I think it is... You can tell how badly he wants to take Mandalore off the board. You know why? Because this is a former race of warriors. The last thing he wants... once he takes over as emperor, is to have to fight them. It would hold up everything.
So that's why Dooku is, you know, paired up with Death Watch. They're thinking of ways to go about dealing with this. Like, the Mandalorians at their core are a threat.
Oh, huge threat. Yeah. Huge threat, which is why he wants them off the board. And this is one of the only points I've seen so far in the Clone Wars where this does not go according to plan for Palpatine and Dooku. Yes, they have backup plans, and that's insinuated at the end of this, but that was clearly not the plan because they were this close to having them basically have an occupation at Mandalore, which they knew would turn the people to Death Watch, and then in turn, Death Watch was under their thumb when the tides turned 5 years from now.
Yeah.
And... that is not how it plays out, but that's how they wanted it to. So that was very interesting to see, actually. Like, literally, Satine, like, throts this entire plan, which you know that puts a target on her back. Has to. And Padme is also just always a pain in the ass for Palpatine, so it's pretty funny to watch. But he's like, oh, man, my future apprentice wasn't in love with you, I swear to why I yada.
Yeah. The whole, that arc was great, though, but let's continue to the final arc.
Yeah, the final arc is, man, it kind of almost feels like it comes out of left field. We get a young Boba Fett that infiltrates a Republic command cruiser. For those that don't remember.
They go on a field trip, basically.
Yeah, he goes on a field trip. They think he's a clone cadet.
Yep.
And it's perfect, right? Because he does look like all of them. He's a clone. And his entire purpose and the entire purpose of this three-episode arc is for Boba Fett to get revenge. He wants Mace Windu dead. He watched Mace Windu kill his father in an arena. Brutally, by the way. Cuts his head off. I mean, the end of season, the end of episode two, he's literally holding his father's head slash helmet in his hands and
that
touches.
That helmet comes to play in this arc, too.
Yeah, and, you know, this one's quick-paced. I kind of like it in that once it starts moving, it really starts moving and doesn't stop. And I actually really like seeing Boba Fett as a kid and, like, because
How is he being raised? Like, where does he go after that?
Not a good influence. Not a good influence, by the way.
We find out that, you know, he's hanging out with Aura Sing, and Aura Sing is nuts. The fact that Hondo is like,
okay, well, kind of a little ahead, but
not a little bit, but not really. Like, they try to blow up, it doesn't get Mace.
Yeah, the weird thing I have about Aura Sing is she must have been very close with Jango, because I don't see any other reason why a bounty hunter of her caliber would basically be taking a job and continues to focus on this job that's not making them money. This is the only part I'm a little confused by this. Like, and I don't even know how they got the other guy who's annoying. I can't remember his name. He's just annoying, and she ends up killing him anyways. And Bossk especially, Bossk is one of the more brutal bounty hunters, by the way. I would put him near the category of Cad Bane. And I'm like, why are you guys doing this? Like, I know that they were probably friends with Jango, right? They had some kind of maybe loyalty or something to pay back, sort of. But my God, at what point do you just call it and be like, yeah, this ain't working out? Like, this thing goes to such lengths. Honestly, they should have cut and run after it didn't work out killing Mace at his quarters. Instead, they kidnap some of the commanders. They set a trap on the planet. Then they try to set a trap over with her ex, which apparently is Hondo. The whole thing is nuts.
We also see that Hondo does have morals, though, at the end of the day.
No, Hondo does not have morals. I will challenge you on that and say, here's what Hondo does. He has learned his goddamn lesson. This man has gone against Anakin and Obi-Wan multiple times.
He's like, it's not worth it with the Jedi, but he's telling Boba, your father wouldn't like this. Like,
right.
Hondo does have a tiny ounce of honor.
He's got a Grinch heart. It's somewhere down there. It's a few sizes too small. But
yeah, maybe after dating Aura Sing, that's what happens. But
no, I think getting your ass kicked again and again after the Jedi is probably part of it.
I know.
But no, he does have like a very serious conversation with Boba. And because Boba's kind of like, why should I help? Like, I didn't get anything. I'm the one hurting. I didn't get what I wanted. And, you know, he tells him, like, your father was honorable. He would have done the right thing. These are innocent hostages that have nothing to do with this. And he's right. Jango probably wouldn't have done any of this, honestly. No. Like, Boba is also, you can
emotional.
See, Boba's emotional. He's still in mourning, and you can tell he's going against his own father's teachings, because throughout this arc, he is reluctant to do the really terrible things that, like, Aura Sing has no problem doing.
Yeah, and Aura Sing leaves him as well, which is tough for him.
That was the other thing I was a little confused about. She went through all this, but then, I guess, at the same time, there was no way she was going to be able to get Boba and escape. So, you know, she's going to save herself first when she has to, but whatever. It was a very interesting arc. The only thing that made me kind of scratch my head a little bit of the overall planning of the story was that Plo Koon and Ahsoka were the ones that eventually went. Like, I get it. Anakin and Mace are hurt. It just kind of took out a little bit of the, I don't know, it kind of took about a little bit of the final showdown for me that Mace wasn't there.
I mean, Mace, he was like, how am I just going over this? And Mace is like, you just have to. And I'm like,
yeah,
Mace, that's mean.
And then at the end, when Mace sees this child that he has orphaned, this man has orphaned a child. I don't care if he's a bounty hunter. I don't care. He just like, you're going to have to forget me. He's like, I'm not gonna. He's like, well, you're going to have to get over it. I'm like, dude, that is like, Mace to me is, I love that character. He's very complicated and interesting in my opinion, but he is brutal.
Yes.
He's brutal. Him and Anakin clash all the time, and I think it's interesting because he is, in my opinion, at times more brutal than Anakin in some regards. He's not killing younglings, but, you know, he is orphaning children and then telling them to get the hell over it.
Yeah.
What the hell?
I think that, you know, as much as Anakin and Mace fight, they do have some similar tendencies.
Oh, yeah.
I was very aggressive. It's like, they're very aggressive, different ways of going about things, but I think that's probably why they fight so much, too.
Well, it's interesting because Mace actually has a form, a lightsaber form that he uses that actually draws on the dark side a little bit of his opponents. And yeah, did you not know this? Yeah, so.
Did you know this?
No, because I thought I've told you about it. So Mace has he has adopted one of the most aggressive lightsaber styles for a Jedi to use.
So is that why he technically would have beat Palpatine?
And it actually pulls on more emotions. That's actually, yes, actually, you're funny. You jumped exactly to what people have said. He actually draws on more emotions than most Jedi would during a fight, and he also does very well against dark side users and drawing on their emotions as well to help fuel his fighting style, right? And that is the argument that has actually been made on forums and different things. It's like, well, how did Mace beat, like, you know, what, you know, Palpatine? I was like, well, he's actually the perfect person to fight against Palpatine is the running argument. So that's also, I think, in a weird way, why him and Anakin sometimes clash. Like, Mace
emotions wise, yeah.
Mace is very suspicious of him throughout the entire time, but also Mace is kind of like, you know,
we're in a war.
Yeah, it's interesting. It was a very good. So it's been a long time since I've seen season two, and I was surprised about how good it was. It is. It's very good. Yeah. I think it really helped hook Claudia the rest of the way. I don't want to speak for her.
It definitely hooked you in. You were like, let's watch more.
Yeah.
Are you free right now?
Yeah, I'm ready to go.
You want to take a break from work? You want to watch? It's 20 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're already diving into season three a little bit. We've seen a couple episodes and we're back on Mandalore again. And that's been interesting. And
yeah, plenty more to talk about when we finish season three.
Yeah, plenty more to talk about season three. And obviously, if you want to check out anything else related to Star Wars, we've got you. We know we have Andor that's been moved to September 21st. So we got a decent ways till then. So in between now and then, we got about, almost 6 weeks worth. And, you know, Nerdy will be back next week. We'll talk about something else. And if anything timely comes up, we'll talk about it. But I really don't think we're going to see much new Star Wars news between now and then.
Yep.
I think we'll see maybe one more trailer. Maybe. Probably, because we still got 6 weeks. We'll probably do like a week before or 2 weeks before. But other than that, yeah, we'll talk about something different with Nerdy next week. And we'll find something. So don't worry. We'll be here. But thanks so much for hanging out, friends. You can find Jawa Chatter everywhere on all socials and YouTube and listen on your favorite podcast platform. So please like and subscribe if you're on YouTube. And thank you so much, everybody. Utini, and may the Force be with you.
Bye, friends.
Bye, friends.